Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Web of Extinction by John Conroe, narrated by James Patrick Cronin. Chapter 1.
Greetings, Ajaya. It's been, what, a month since we were together?
Hi, Cade. About 3 weeks, I said. He held both hands out from his sides, almost shoulder height, palms up, and his eyebrows rose.
We're still here.
Yes, we are.
The world hasn't ended. You were wrong,
he said, throwing it out like a challenge.
I'm sorry, did I put a deadline on it? I shot back. You said a whole lot of provocative things, Ajaya. You said Drone Night was run against this country by this country. You said the spiders were looking to wipe out mankind, and you indicated the last one was using NSA facilities to do just that. You claimed to have a bomb in your neck.
Yes?
That's it?
He asked, incredulous, playing to the camera. What is it you want, Cade? I know you're kick-ass at these on-air theatrics. I'm not. Why don't you just lay out whatever it is you want to say?
He looked at me for a moment, then his eyes hardened. I'm saying that you lied.
Ah, there it is. See, that wasn't so hard, was it? I said. So where do you want to go with this? What's your attack?
He frowned. The government has refuted everything you said. Said you were a glory-seeking liar, that the whole thing was to get your 15 minutes of fame, or maybe infamy would be better.
Of course it refuted it. I even told you that they would be better at spinning than I could ever be.
But did you research Dr. Wilkes? Did you research Titan Point? Cade, have you done your homework?
He was starting to get angry.
We looked into Wilkes. Yes, she worked for the stock exchange. Yes, she was an acknowledged expert in AI, but that's it. She disappeared over 10 years ago.
Just like I said. But doesn't the fact of her disappearance trigger your journalistic instincts? Or is this just a witch hunt for ratings?
It's about getting to the truth. Yes, we looked into Titan Point. Very mysterious, but ultimately no proof of anything.
So why would I do this, Cade? Why would I send my family away, convince Astrid to leave, and make up a bunch of shit? I have no weapons, no drone assistant, I'm all alone, and you think I, what, want attention?
People do all kinds of things for fame and fortune, Ajaya.
You think I want fame? I lived a long time in the shadow of Zone War, Cade. The shadows are where I'm happiest. The only reason I have done or said any of this is because the danger is real.
But Ajaya, the world hasn't ended.
Hasn't it? I asked. His frown deepened. I asked you if you did your homework. You didn't. You did superficial searches on information I gave you. You listened to the government. Very poor reporting, Cade. Piss poor. But hey, it's okay because I did the work for you. Both you and Trinity have emails in your inbox right now from me. Open them.
His eyes unfocused as he accessed his contacts and his frown deepened.
What is this?
He refocused on me.
It's an AI-driven graph of global accidents involving expert systems. It goes back 10 years from yesterday.
Trinity, can we put this up?
He asked off-camera. She nodded, and almost as soon as he spoke, the graph popped up on the wall behind us.
Walk me through this, he said, looking curious.
10 years ago, the rate of accidents by AI expert systems was moderately high. Car accidents, plane issues, shipping errors, accidental release of private information, financial security, etc. But then they drop right off as AI improved. Within 3 years, they bottomed to almost nothing and stayed that way for over 4 years. But look here, at the last 3 years, they started to creep up 3 years ago, doubled 2 years ago, and then went up by a factor of 10 early this year. Now, in the last few months, they've skyrocketed.
Ajaya, everyone knows this. It's the result of your meddling with the internet.
And when does the government say I meddled, Cade? 4 weeks ago?
Yet these numbers have been shooting up long before that. Ships colliding in open ocean, planes crashing, cars and buses smashing. But that's the obvious stuff, Cade. Open that line there, the one from 2 months ago.
He sent a silent command, and the data plot opened a sub-window that listed the accidents.
Read through those, Cade. Ignore the planes and ships. Look at line 3. An Ebola-infected man leaving Africa gets by the airport AI's health screener and makes it to France, where additional infections occur.
Yeah, like 3 people, then they stopped it, he said, not impressed.
It shouldn't have happened at all. Look at number 7. 2 ships colliding in the North Sea. One an oil tanker, the other carrying grain. Both sunk. And an oil slick over one of the most important fishing grounds in Europe.
Look at 18. A Russian unmanned fighter buzzing a U.S. combat ship and it loses control, smashing into the ship's side. It hit a heavily armored spot. If it hadn't, that ship would likely have been crippled or possibly sunk.
How about war, Cade?
Look at 39. A floodgate control AI in Ohio malfunctions and floods out countless acres of farmland throughout the state, right at planting time. And on and on. All of those happened long before the government said I or Harper had any impact on the web.
You're implying that the spider did it? Plum Blossom? Through the NSA facility?
Yes, Cade, I am. Why are all these systems crashing now? The government didn't deny that some drones escaped the zone and created problems, but this stuff is much farther spread than a few drones.
Like what?
I don't know. Malware? A virus? Trojan horse, maybe? Not my area of expertise. All I know is a supercomputer programmed to kill off humanity has had unlimited access to the internet via a government intelligence satellite uplink for years. And if I'm so far off, why did Zone Defense bomb the top of the Long Lines building 2 weeks ago? I know that you know they did that, because your new show caught video of it.
This seems desperate, he said.
To me, it seems like you're willfully hiding your heads in the sand.
Cade, are you familiar with tipping points?
Like when something reaches a point of no return? He asked.
Exactly.
I think Plum Blossom is experimenting with viruses and malware, looking for the right algorithm to put enough expert systems out of
I gasped, a sudden pain in my neck so severe that I thought for a second that the bomb had gone off. Sharp, shooting pain up into my brain, down into my chest. I felt my hand slap my neck, a motion I had avoided for weeks, yet this time I couldn't stop the reflex.
Ajaya? Cade asked, concern replacing the challenging expression he had worn moments before. A spasm took my voice, but a few seconds later I was able to shake my head.
Ajaya, are you okay?
The pain receded, moving from a red-hot poker to a dull, thought-robbing throb.
How's the, new show going? How's it going?
I stuttered, changing the subject as fast as I could.
Good. Our drone teams have killed off hundreds of enemy units. Are you all right?
He turned to the camera before I could respond.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a moment.
Trinity was at my side in a second, her assistant and another person with her.
What was that? Are you okay? She asked.
It was sharp pain. I thought the bomb had gone off, I said.
But what was it?
Trinity pressed. The assistant offered me a bottle of water and I took a sip.
I'm pretty sure it was a warning, I said.
Are you acting? Cade asked, concern changing to anger. The other guy behind Trinity shook his head.
No, our programming AI says it's a 99.999% real pain reaction. A really severe pain reaction.
So what does it mean? Cade asked, anger gone as fast as it came.
It means I can't talk about the topic I was talking about, I said.
The whole virus thing? Cade asked. The throb in my neck shot me a short burst of agony. I nodded, again unable to speak for a moment.
Oh, God, it's real, Cade said, realization dawning.
Of course it's real. You think Ajaya would lie about that? He's never lied about anything, especially the spiders and the zone, Trinity said, leaning close to look at first my neck and then my eyes.
But you told me to come at him like he was lying.
Oh? Ratings? Cade said, the light going off.
She somehow managed to give us both one look that simultaneously said no duh to him and it's just business to me. It was a whole body kind of thing with an eye roll and a shrug mixed in.
Can you continue the interview? She asked me.
Not about that.
No, of course not. We'll just continue to talk about the new Drone Wars segment that you guys left off on. In fact, we'll pull up live feed and you two can just ad-lib. You're both good at that, especially together, she said with a big smile that seemed mostly for Cade's benefit. He nodded, eyes slightly wide.
Is that okay? She asked me. Yes, just nothing about what I was talking about before. My leash just got tugged. Hard, I said.
Okay, let's bring it back live,
she said, waving her people back out of camera range. And we're live in 3, 2, 1, counted down the guy who had taken my side in the credibility argument.
Chapter 2.
So you can see our teams are fielding some pretty impressive drones, Cade said, covering his nervousness, but not perfectly. We were watching live feeds from a trio of production drones that were following the new Drone Wars teams as they sent their highly customized, self-built combat drones into the zone. I had, with nothing else to do on my daily schedule, watched most of the daily episodes up to this point, so I was already familiar with all the teams. It had been interesting to see what smart amateurs had built to send in against military bots, and I had noted that the newer model units were racking up a decent kill count against the older zone units, but each swarm of team drones was being run by inexperienced amateurs, both live humans and AIs.
Yeah, pretty cool designs, I said.
I sense a but in your sentence, Cade said.
Well, this has been tried before. The military did it right after the walls went up around Manhattan. Then the zone drones adapted quickly and started to eat the military units for breakfast.
But this is a decade later. They're old and slow, and you personally knocked out two of the spiders, Cade challenged. His whole tone was different this time, though, much less hostile.
Which is why it might be taking longer for them to adapt, I said, trying to stay engaged. I won't lie, the whole stabbing pain in the neck and brain thing had shaken me up. A lot.
Plum Blossom has a lot to handle by itself.
But what would they do? He asked, curious.
I don't know. Set up ambushes or something? I said.
His trademark smile came back. Come on, Ajaya. You can do better than that. Nobody knows the zone like you do. Give us a guess. A real guess, he said, the normal Cade back, replacing the nervous Cade.
I felt my interest peak for the first time since we'd come back from break. I gave him a nod and then focused on the screen, really studying the situation. There were four separate teams, with swarms ranging from four drones to a really big group of a couple dozen mini-drones, all flying in fully synchronized formations. All four swarms were traveling at a pretty high altitude, flying between skyscrapers, trolling for drones, which they hadn't been seeing.
How many have they killed so far to date? I asked.
He'd told me once, but I hadn't paid much attention because, you know, neck bomb and shit.
412, he said.
Most of those in the first week, right?
Yes, the zone units have gone quiet lately, not coming out to challenge these big teams.
Which makes sense, right? If you're getting your ass beat, stop going head-to-head. So, yeah, I'd expect them to see almost nothing, and I'd be...
There, one of the little ones, a kite.
The voice of one of the team leaders broke in, excited.
The ones that hunt with tigers.
Wary if I did see one, I finished. Especially of something as valuable as a tiger.
Look, that's the tiger unit right there. It's running,
another voice said. I'd lost track of who the players were. All four swarms were dipping down between the buildings, dropping low to the street. Some of them carried little bombs they could attempt to drop on the heavily armored tiger. Some of the littlest ones were bombs, kamikaze drones.
You think it's a trap? Cade said. I mean, it's running for cover.
You're confusing it with a real animal, Cade. It's a computer in a mobile machine. Darting out into view is completely illogical. The sort of instinct an animal that hadn't fought drones would follow, but these things don't have instincts. They have combat response programming, adapted over 10 years of warfare. All of the teams were racing to get over top of the fast-moving tiger. By rights, it should have run into the first open building, I said. Actually, it never should have broken cover at all. Suddenly it turned sharply and ran right through a glass storefront window.
Oh, damn, Cade, they should pull...
I didn't get any further before the screen that was providing the current video point of view for the production went white. Simultaneously, the other two video windows of the Flottercott recording drones went crazy, the scenery blurring out as the drones both got knocked through the sky by an explosion.
Damn, Cade said.
Then all three screens went dead, but one kept flickering like it might come back. Finally, the picture began to return, and when it cleared, we could see that the street was cratered and all of the windows on the facing buildings were gone, along with most of the doors.
What was that? Cade asked, eyes wide.
At a guess, a fuel air explosion? You know, like a thermobaric grenade, I said, studying the wreckage.
They have bombs? Cade asked, shocked.
They have access to propane, gasoline, aerosols, cartridges, probably blasting caps, maybe military or police plastic explosives. For that, all they needed was to flood the air with propane and then ignite it with a spark.
How did they learn to do that?
From us, Cade. The military, the zone war teams. We've used stuff like that for years.
They learned it from us?
That's what they do, Cade. They learn.
Chapter 3.
It was the new show's first setback, but it was a big one. All four teams were wiped out in one big blast. There were still 12 other teams, as they only competed four at a time, but with 25% of the competitors gone in an instant, the show needed to pause and regroup. We finished our conversation pretty fast, and the live show ended for the day. As soon as the cameras went dark, the studio went into damage control mode. Cade argued for continuing the interview, as he thought picking my brain would be good television and good prep for the next episode, but Trinity vetoed the idea. So I headed home, back to an empty apartment in Brooklyn. Mom, Amma, and the twins were all up north with my other grandparents, and they needed to stay there as far as I was concerned. They had things to do. Astrid and her family had relocated to New Hampshire and showed no signs of coming back, especially since I kept sending them the results of my ongoing research into world AI issues. In fact, they were in contact with my mother, working together for the first time in years. So I had an empty apartment and some Indian takeout. Actually, it was pretty good food, just not as good as Amma would make. I checked my emails briefly, just a glance, really. These days, the hate mail way outweighed anything positive. Turns out people don't like to be warned about stuff. They don't like anything that scares them, threatens their comfortable lives, or shocks their worldviews. So I had haters who were angry that the world hadn't ended, angry that I insulted our benevolent government, that I claimed to have a bomb in my neck, and quite a few that were angry that I had been dating Astrid. I had my personal AI run a special filter first, then one for positive emails and anything that might be really important. Those numbered only a handful, so I was done in no time. The news was full of stories about the Drone Wars show disaster and had far too many replays from my interview with Cade. Mom called, worried about the pain I had shown on television. The whole fam had watched it, and I spent the better part of an hour chatting with Mom, my sisters, both grandmothers, and my grandpa. Everyone was supportive, even the twins, which I took to be a sign of the apocalypse. Mom, in particular, needed a lot of reassurance. I felt bad because I wanted to tell her that Ricky would take care of it, but I couldn't tell her about Ricky, or Zone Defense would know, too. Instead, I had to do the best I could to convince her that I would be okay. Then,
15 minutes after that call, I got another one.
Hey, you scared me tonight, she said.
Hell, I scared myself. I'm not gonna lie. It kinda hurt pretty bad.
Ajaya, what are we going to do?
Well, that was a warning, obviously, but I'm working on it. Got an ace up my sleeve, as Dad used to say. She was silent for a few seconds, processing my words. It might take a second, but I was certain she'd get my meaning. I couldn't wait to hear her speak again. I love her voice, although I hated to hear the worry and fear in it.
Really?
She sounded just slightly hopeful. Yes, in a different suit than my old ace. See what she made of that.
Well, an ace is an ace. The suit doesn't matter, unless you're playing with trump cards.
Yeah, then an ace in the trump suit is top card.
Yes, true. That's interesting.
The fear was gone. We were best friends long before we were a couple. Best friends can usually communicate whole reams of information with very few words. Isn't it?
Yeah, she said, her tone firm. Speaking of Dad's, mine has been talking to people he knows.
That's a broad field, Astrid. The guy knows a ton of people.
True, but he's been talking to people who have the inside scoop. Seems your old pals have been hunting the zone, looking for what you left behind.
I should think so.
Yeah, seems they're coming up empty.
Not surprised. It's a big area. Lots of great hiding spots.
Apparently they're catching shit for not looking in the right spots. Lots of tension these days.
Well, they caused it. They ought to fix it. Save me the hassle.
But you can't fix it. You're locked out. Ajaya? You know you're locked out, right?
Am I? Locks are meant to be picked, Astrid. And if they can't find the prize, someone has to.
She went silent again. You don't have to do everything yourself.
Hey, I like help as much as anyone, but I'm kinda on my own here. And you know me, I work pretty well by myself.
You do and you have, but you're way behind the eight ball, as my dad says, even with an ace.
True. We'll see. Gotta do something. It's getting worse out there.
Yeah, we heard there's been some military incidents that haven't made the news. Close calls between different forces all over the world. A lot of these things are being hushed up.
Can't rock the boat. They gotta keep the status quo.
There won't be any status at all if it all goes to shit, she said.
The worried tone was back. I asked about her family to change the subject. Then she asked about mine. I told her how much I missed her, and she reciprocated. Not going to report the rest of our conversation because it was for her, me, and, of course, whatever bored government spy was listening in. After we hung up, I thought about maybe watching a movie. I was an hour and a half into an old Marvel Avengers film when I heard a sound. Tapping. On glass. About time. I went to my bedroom, and sure enough, the carbon-black, delta-winged form of the Decimator drone was hovering on the other side of the glass. "Hey, Rikki-tikki," I said as I slid the window up. Speaking out loud was okay as long as he was on sight, his ability to intercept the signals my only hope for a future.
"Hello, AJ. Have you recovered from the pain impulse transmitted through your implant?"
"You know about that, huh?"
"I monitor zone defense transmissions with special attention to the watch drone that follows you and feeds signals to the chip embedded next to your carotid artery. I also monitor any television show that you are scheduled to be on."
"Yeah, it hurt."
"I have modified the programming of your implant. It will no longer produce such a response. If fired again, it will produce a result analogous to an insect bite. You will have to act convincingly to avoid zone defense, learning that the chip is no longer under their full control."
"You can change the chip's programming? That's new, right?"
"Correct. Zone Defense IT sent new programming to the watch drone in order to create the pain effect you experienced. I copied all access codes. In addition, I have adjusted the communications protocol to ensure that future signals will go through my CPU before they are transmitted to the watcher."
"Can you defuse the bomb?"
"Not until the detonation code is sent. Part of that databyte will have the access codes for the explosive portion. At that time, I will defuse it.
So, basically, they have to decide to kill me before you can stop the bomb?
Correct. As I control the transmission feed to the Watcher, I will intercept and change the coding. At that point, you will be able to surgically remove the chip.
This was good news. Terrifying news, but ultimately good. If I trusted my AI companion to intercept and change the kill code, then I could be free of the chip. Until they came along and either put a new one in, or just killed me outright. This will require some careful planning.
Correct.
Then, let's get started. The next morning, I hopped out of bed and went for a run. With no one around and nothing to do, I had been filling my time with exercise. Dad was always a huge proponent of conditioning, and he'd started me at such an early age that I'm afraid I might be a little OCD about it at this point. Morning runs were normal, but the distance had doubled. On this morning, for the first time in a while, I had a real spring in my step, and lots of thoughts to process. Thinking while moving is, I think, common to most people. After all, we only had our feet for travel for most of our existence on this planet. We're probably wired for dual movement and contemplation. So I ran through the streets of Brooklyn and thought about Ricky's revelations and the steps I needed to take. There were many, and I had to get them in just the exact right order. One step out of place, and I would die. Actually, a lot of people would die. Maybe all people would die. I capped the run at a little short of 12 kilometers, my loop bringing me back to the apartment building. My planning continued as I took the stairs down instead of up. A year or so ago, the building superintendent, Lee Hudson, had taken up a collection from interested residents and put a decent bench and set of weights into an unused storage room in the basement of the building. This time of morning, during the work week, I usually had it to myself, and today was no exception. My build is lean, inherited from my father. It is built for endurance, agility, speed. Trying to train myself to be a bodybuilder or a football player would be a waste of time. Extra muscle mass would only slow me down in the zone, and my metabolism would just burn it off anyway. So I train for strength without mass. The strength to carry weighty ammunition, a heavy sniper rifle, to retrieve valuable items from the zone. Heavyweights, at least heavy for me, with low reps. Big movements like deadlifts, squats, bench press mixed with bodyweight exercises that help with climbing, like pull-ups, dips, and various rows. Since I follow a schedule, my routine was already set. So again, I was able to think and plan while I lifted, my body almost on autopilot. Gradually, over the course of the morning, a picture formed, the framework of a plan. First, the broad strokes, the scaffolding, so to speak. Then, bit by bit, a series of smaller steps layered into and over the rest. Examining each piece, I rejected the most complex, the ones with the lowest probabilities of success. And finally, by the time the last rep of the last set clinked down on the concrete floor, I had something that just possibly might work. Basically, I had five main issues. First, equipment. Well, specifically weapons, as in, I had none. Zone defense and the police had denied me access to my weapons. I still had my stealth suit, but other than my 9x23mm pistol and my kukri, I was naked. No rifles, no explosives, no booby traps. Once I got into the zone and made my way to a cache or two, I would be set, but no way was I going to travel from entry to cache with just a pistol. Second was access. Zone D controlled all entries and exits to the zone. The few weak points that I knew of had been hardened and sealed when I showed them to Major Yoshida, so I needed to figure out a new entrance and exit point for my personal mission. Third, Plum Blossom. As in, where the hell was it? Did it still hang out at the NSA Long Lines / Titan Point building, or the Western Union building, or was it in a new location somewhere in the 88 square kilometers of the island? I mean, how many places could a black, self-propelled sofa hide in the burrow? Once I found it, I'd need to kill it, while avoiding the thousands of drones that were still protecting it. Just a minor detail. Fourth,
the little matter of the bomb in my neck. Theoretically, Ricky would take care of it, but that required me pissing off the powers that be to the point where they sent the kill signal. Then, if Ricky really did intercept it and managed to change it, I would have to perform a little self-surgery with a sharp blade near my own carotid artery.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?